compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
I have a special treat for you. I've been talking about Father Rocky's brand new book that will be coming out in the not-too-distant future. It's called The Treasures of the Rosary, Reflections by Those Who Pray It Daily. It's free, and as you know, I've been telling you that you can get your free copy, at least you can get your, what's the word? You can get dibs on your free copy by going to relevantradio.com/treasures and tell us where you'd like us to send your free copy. It's free in every respect, no shipping, no handling. The book is free. It's beautiful, filled with meditations by Father Rocky, by St. John Paul II, by St. Jose Maria, beautifully adorned with pictures throughout the book, and it's absolutely free. So that's the first part of the treat, I guess. The second part of the treat is we actually have Father Rocky himself who stopped by to talk with us. Welcome, Father Rocky. Thanks
for
joining us.
Great to be with you, Patrick. Thank you so much. I'm happy that we can release this new book called Treasures of the Rosary, Reflections on the Rosary by Those Who Pray It Daily. There's three sections in it, two written by two great saints and one section written by one great sinner. That's me. The two great saints are St. John Paul II and St. Jose Maria. And we've had a lot of enthusiasm for the Rosary on Relevant Radio. We've seen that for years on our app because we provide it for people and they get their choice of the mysteries, glorious, sorrowful, joyful, or luminous. And they get their choice of a 15-minute version, a 17-minute version, or a 28-minute version, which has some reflections on the Rosary and the Litany of Our Lady of Loreto. So I call it regular, extra, and super duper. And then we started the Family Rosary Across America Live several years ago after the merger of the Immaculate Heart. And since COVID shut things down last year, I've been doing it every night. We've had just an enthusiastic outpouring for this. I thought, well, maybe this is a good time to give people a little bit more about the origins of the Rosary, the meaning of the Rosary, its scriptural basis, and also we've got this marvelous apostolic letter that St. John Paul II wrote back in 2002, towards the end of his pontificate. He released it on October 16th, which was the anniversary of his election. It's called Rosarium Virginis Maria. That's Latin, mm-hmm. because all the official papal texts are Latin, and that means the Rosary of the Virgin Mary. And it was in that document that he presented to the world the luminous mysteries. And I'm thinking 1,000 years from now, that might be what St. John Paul II is remembered for, the luminous mysteries of the Rosary. And then there's another booklet. We're really glad we got the permission to print this by St. Jose Maria. He has one or two page reflection on each of the mysteries of the Rosary that kind of explains a little more, draws you in, and allows you to meditate on those passages. And then the section I wrote was last fall on our 54-day Rosary Novena for the needs of the Church and the Nation. I took each of the titles in the Litany of Our Lady, also known as the Litany of Loreto, and explained it in, about 150, 160 words each. So there's little tidbits there, and I greatly enjoy that. So that book can be yours today, all of our audience listening right now, for free. This is amazing. It's free. And we pay the packing and shipping and handling all that. You get it for free. All you have to do is go to our website, relevantradio.com, or our app and sign up for it there. Please don't call in, but go to our website or go to our app and sign up for it right there. And you'll get it in 10 weeks or so before the month of October, which is the month of the Rosary. And all you have to do is give us your name and your address. So please put your name and address in there carefully, because sometimes, like with Drew's book or my book last year, people complain they didn't get it because they didn't fill out the registration form correctly. So we're really happy we can just get a beautiful picture on the front cover, one of the most beautiful paintings by Botticelli. He was an Italian Renaissance artist. And then some other graphics within the book. We also include a compendium of Marian prayers, the Hail Holy Queen, the Memorare, the Hail Mary, things of that sort, and a little section on how to pray the Rosary. So it's yours today if you go to our website, relevantradio.com, or go to our app and sign up for it right there.
I am really looking forward to seeing this book, Father, as a daily prayer of the Rosary myself. It's such a big part of my life as a Catholic. And I found, I'm sure you've heard the same thing from other people, that when people start praying the Rosary on a regular basis, their lives improve. They get better. Their marriages get stronger. And good things follow in the wake of people praying the Rosary. So I'm so happy that the book is on the way, and I can't wait to read it.
That's great. You know, we heard that testimony, I think, two nights ago by a fellow who called into the Family Rosary Cross America. And he said he just wanted to give thanks to God. And we hear that more and more frequently. People call back. I called in a month ago, a week ago, 2 months ago, and my prayers were answered. In this case, he had an addiction to alcohol, and there were some other things. And he started praying the rosary. And it said it's the first time he's had the willpower to resist this addiction. Mm. So that's a mighty big blessing. Oh, and yeah. And what's so beautiful about the rosary, you can pray it anywhere. You don't have to be in a church. You can pray it at home. You pray it in the kitchen, in the garage. You can pray it while you're riding a bike, I suppose.
Or a rider lawnmower if you have a really big lawn.
Yeah, absolutely, a rider lawnmower, right? You put the earbuds on, you listen to it. Climbing a mountain, on a train, in a plane. And if you don't finish
it all... Sounds like a Dr. Seuss book about
absolutely.
The rosary, actually.
And if you don't finish it all at the same time, you can finish it later. And even if you get distracted, it's okay. But that's the beauty about that. So this book can be yours today. For those who listen to the Patrick Matrude Show, and a lot of people do, and they love your devotion to Our Lady, by going to relevantradio.com, signing up. And only one per household, though. All right, one limit, one per household. And you can't sign up other people. They've got to sign up for themselves, right? I know some of you are very well-meaning say, oh, I should get this for my son or my daughter or my mother. If they don't want it themselves, please don't sign up. Encourage them to sign up. That would be a great thing. And we'll send it out to you as soon as we can.
Yeah. And in the meantime, people who may not know how to pray the rosary, or maybe it's been a long time, can you talk a little bit about what we have on the app for them by way of learning to
pray
the rosary?
Sure. It's all right there. On the right side drop-down menu, we have resources for prayers. We have the rosary there that's recorded, and you can listen to it even if you're not near a Wi-Fi or a cell phone tower, because you can download it to your phone. You can listen to it right there at any time you want, and it's free. And then there's a little section there on how to pray the rosary. And I remember when I used to teach boys at a boys' school in Chicago, Northridge Prep. He said, Father, what do we do if we don't have a rosary with us? How do we pray the rosary? So we got two hands, you got 10 fingers on it. All right, so use your fingers. Now, of course, these kids they're persistent. Well, what if we don't have any hands? Let's say we lost our hands in an accident. I said, well, you got 2 feet. You use your toes. Of course, the next question is, what if you don't have any feet? I said, well, then you don't have to pray because you've had plenty of suffering already. All right. Don't you love it?
I'm reminded of a story of a prisoner of war during World War II who was in a Japanese concentration camp, and he made a rosary out of barbed wire. And his captors didn't realize that that's what it was, so they didn't stop him from using it to pray the rosary. But that's how he prayed it, on a piece of barbed wire.
Is that right?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
That always, it's really struck me as, you know, the dedication that people have to Our Lady, knowing that she's praying for us, and how once the rosary becomes part of your daily life, it changes everything for the better. It really does. And another thing too, Father, and you hear confessions and mm-hmm. I don't, but I'd have to suspect that people who pray the rosary every day don't fall into serious sin, or at least it's very difficult for them to fall into serious sin, I would think.
Sure. That combined with the Holy Eucharist and frequent confession. And, you know, when we speak about serious sin and mortal sin, you always have to make the distinction, the sin of weakness versus the sin of malice. Certainly right. There's not going to be any sin of malice, which is hatred towards God. But some people, even very well-meaning, and who love the Lord and love Our Lady, they may have weaknesses, right? And yet the rosary keeps them in the game. Right. So I believe anyone who dies with a rosary in their hand or wearing the scapular, they will go to heaven. And I'm always reminded, I think it's a very hopeful scene from the movie Brideshead Revisited. I don't know if you ever saw the mm-hmm. series that the BBS put together. Mm-hmm. And it's based on Evelyn Waugh's book, The Brideshead Revisited. So the guy who left his wife and married outside of the church and is unrepentant, finally on his deathbed, he gives a little signal that he wanted to make the sign of the cross, and that was enough to receive God's grace. So as Catholics, as Christians, we always live in hope, because with God's grace, everything can change for the better in an instant. And so we should pray for people every day that they open their hearts to our Lord, and at least carry a rosary in your pocket. Mm-hmm. And it will remind you of God's presence. So I'm glad we can do this. I'm glad we can promote devotion to the Blessed Mother. I think it really takes our relationship with the Lord much deeper. Also gives you a clear sense you're not alone out there. You're accompanied by the guardian angels and by Our Lady. And that's a big help. I carry a bunch of rosaries, you know, and in fact, mm-hmm. sometimes they're broken, right? And somebody called and said, Father, are you missing a Hail Mary on one of your decades? And I looked and I said, yeah, I guess I am. Yeah, you just can't keep coming at nine.
Well, that's right? A sign of a well-used rosary if it breaks from time to time.
Oh, they do. They do. I think the ones that last the longest are the cord ones they can't break, or the ones from the Holy Land. And I've seen others that are almost industrial style, right? Like a military right. issue. That's great. I keep it in the car. I keep it on my desk. I really look forward to leading the family Rosary Across America every night. And whenever I can, I do it live. And thanks to the miracle of telecommunication systems and our crackerjack engineers here, all I need is a phone that is within eyesight of a cell phone tower that has data in it. And so mm-hmm. I can do that anywhere. And I've done that before. You know, so I might be on the road. So I pull over and we tap in. We can even do the video part of it. And it's time to pray the rosary. So what a great blessing. You know, and I remember Venerable Father Payton saying, the family that prays together stays together. And that's mm-hmm. the case with our family. We prayed the rosary together as a family. And I don't know if it was every day of the year or just some days in May or some days in October. Who knows, right? But, you know, we're all still together. My brothers and sisters, we're all talking to each other, all rooting for each other.
Yeah.
Each one is on their own path, but they all have a fond memory of that devotion that keeps the family together.
Speaking of families, I always enjoy when the children call in their little voices and their little beautiful intentions.
Yep.
You've heard some amazing calls from the children, haven't you?
I certainly have, and I look forward to hearing from them, whether it's a little boy or a little girl, and what's going on in their life and what their intentions are. I found the younger the person, the bigger the intention, right? So I think yeah. it was a five-year-old. I said, and do you have anything else? He said, yeah, and then for everyone. Like Tiny Tim, and God bless everyone, right? Yeah. They're such pure and innocent hearts, and they want good for everyone, and they're magnanimous, right?
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful thing. So,
it truly
yeah.
is.
Yeah. And you know, when a child calls in, the whole family's there, right? Mm-hmm. It's not just, you know, one little kid on his own. It's mom, dad is there, grandma, grandpa. They want to pray for their family. They want to pray for relatives. They want to pray for other. Oh, this was a great call last night. Pierre from mm-hmm. Chicago, 9 years old. He wanted to pray for the president of our country to open the borders so his cousins from France could come over here and visit. And I said, Pierre, are you French? He said, yes, I am. Parlez-vous français? Yes, I do.
He didn't respond in French.
No, but, you know, it's a little French boy here in Chicago, and that was his intention. And you know what I saw in the news feed this morning, Patrick?
What's that?
Pierre Trudeau from Canada gave signals they're going to open the border in September. How about that? That might have been Pierre from Chicago who made it happen, because, okay, Pierre, we're going to get the whole country praying for this. From coast to coast, from Maui to Maine, because Pierre, who's 9 years old, wants to see his cousin. So, Lord, get those borders opened. You never know. It's like that woman who called in about a month ago. You were there. We were having this open house at our new facility in Lincolnshire, mm-hmm. and she wanted to pray for three boys, 10, 8, and 6. And I can understand that. Boys are boys, right? And then she said, mm-hmm. oh, yeah, we need rain. Let's pray for rain up in Denmark, Wisconsin. It was really dry at that time.
I remember that.
Entering a drought. So, okay, we're going to get the whole country to pray for rain. Holy smokes. It rained like crazy. It rained 10 days in a row in eastern Wisconsin and Chicago. We got like some places got 10 inches of rain in 10 days in Chicago.
I know.
And I said, all right, next person calls in, we're going to put a limit on it, all right, how much rain and where it is. But that's the power of, I call it, communal intercessory prayer. Everybody praying for the same thing at the same time. The more people pray, the more powerful it is. And wouldn't it be wonderful if we could have millions praying the rosary every night for an end to legal abortion in our country? I think that could trigger a miracle, because it's going to take a miracle.
Wouldn't it be
awesome? It's going to take a miracle.
I agree. Well, I mean, and we at Relevant Radio, we are so blessed to have the technology and the reach. We're on nearly 200 stations now, coast to coast. So
yeah, that's right. Yeah, we reach 244 million people. We have close to 5 million people following us on our Facebook pages. You've got a very good Twitter handle there, and we're going to be probably approaching 1 million downloads of our app by the end of the year. All of that's organic, because a mm-hmm. lot of people download it, use it. Many people have apps they don't use. They don't use 80% of the apps on their phone.
That's true.
Our people use the app, and they all use it in different ways. We're really blessed that way, and we want to continue that.
You have, you weren't planning to talk about this, but you have a massive following on Facebook.
I do.
And like in the Philippines and elsewhere. And
right.
These faithful people, they're praying the rosary with us from all across the globe, aren't they?
Right. And what I've learned, and I was speaking to the priests at a retreat I was at this past week down in Ogle Bay, West Virginia, the 250 priests. I showed a map of the world, how we're doing 2,000 years later. You know, about 33% of the world are Christian, half of that are Catholic. And then I showed a map of the world at night lit up with white lights in terms of internet connections. Mm-hmm. China's off the grid, not that they don't have electricity, they're not on the World Wide Web, right? They're off the grid. And I said, look at Southeast Asia, India, China, Indonesia, Philippines, and that area. They represent two-thirds of the world's population. Two-thirds of the world's population in Southeast Asia. So people ask me on my Facebook page, where are your followers from? I said, they're from all over the world because there's Catholics all over the world. The internet's all over the world. Facebook's all over the world. English is all over the world. And about 7% of the followers are from the United States. Why? Because that's where 7% of the world's population is, the United States. So we've got a huge following in Southeast Asia, India, Vietnam, South Korea, because they're very connected, they're very social, it's very young.
Yes.
And what really triggered the growth on my page is when the Pope went there in 2015, and I put some posts on my page to pray for the Pope, and it just went crazy in the Philippines. And
great.
So we use Facebook judiciously, just as we use YouTube judiciously, as long as that platform is out there that we can bring good news to good people. We're going to use that, but we know we don't own it. We do own the stations. We do own our app. We do own our website. And I don't worry too much about it. You know, people say, what happens if you get a hostile administration in Washington, D.C., and they take away your stations? I said, well, you know, you're not off the hook for evangelization. Maybe we'll have to use smoke signals or do snow angels in the snow or go door to door. You still have to evangelize. Right now, we've got this great opportunity to have radio stations where we can reach a massive audience and bring good news to them. You know, and so we're really blessed because what we're doing in the United States right now, I don't think you do that anywhere else in the world. You certainly couldn't do it in a number of sub-Saharan African countries. You can't do it in Canada. You can't own a station that's just exclusively Catholic. I don't think you can have foreign ownership of stations in Mexico. So what we're doing here in this country is a great blessing, a testimony to the vision of our founding fathers, a freedom of religion and freedom of speech and freedom of the press. And so we're taking advantage of that. It's not easy. A lot of people out there competing for your attention. And, well, we're competing too. And we're really grateful to have people like you on the air who work so hard day in and day out to bring good, solid, useful information to people. We're really blessed that
way. Thank you for that, Father Rocky. Well, as I was saying earlier on the program, I love my job. I love what I do. McCormick, the seasoning company, was offering, they're offering now a taco czar position. 4 months worth of work. They'll pay you $100,000. And I said, I'm not available. I love
that.
What I do. I'm not going to, as much as I love tacos,
yep,
I'm going to do this for as long as God gives me breath. So,
yeah. And you help a lot of people. So, you know, when I was at this priest conference the other day at the end, I said, I want to thank the four professors who were speaking us priests this week, Dr. Scott Hahn, Ralph Martin, Professor John Bergsma from Franciscan, and Father David McConey from St. Louis University. Mm-hmm. I said, you guys work so hard all year long, reading, writing, researching, thinking, and then we come here and you give us the fruits of your labor in 45 minutes. You know, it's a blessing for us. And that's what you do every day on the radio. You've written 27 books. I've seen your library at home. It's a magnificent library. You've read all those things. You've underlined them. You love it. And we get to benefit from the fruit of your hard work. So that's a blessing.
Thank you, Father. Well, I appreciate that. And I'm so glad that we're pulling in the same direction. How about one more time for how people can get the
sure,
new
Sure, just go
rosary
to our book. Website, relevantradio.com, or the free Relevant Radio app, and you can sign up to get a free copy. Everything's paid for, printing, shipping, and handling of Treasures of the Rosary, Reflections on the Rosary by Those Who Pray It Daily. I think you're going to love it, but only while supplies last and they are flying off the shelf. Go right now to relevantradio.com.
This hour is sponsored by Ave Maria Mutual Funds, where financial goals are aligned with pro-life values and fund decisions are based on investment fundamentals designed to preserve and grow wealth without violating moral beliefs. More information at AveMariaFunds.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back. 888-914-9149 is the number. We'll go now to Chicago to talk to Stephanie. Hi, Stephanie.
Hey, Patrick. My question is, with this new document that the Pope has put out, how does that impact the Latin masses currently going on, or what are the potential implications? Maybe you can't fully answer that question, but just thinking
I think I
about
can.
It.
Yeah, why don't I read it to you, because it's okay. Short enough that I can read it and we can comment on it. So this is the Motu Proprio Traditionis Custodes, and it's drawn from the first sentence, which reads, "Guardians of the tradition, the bishops in communion with the Bishop of Rome constitute the visible principle and foundation of the unity of their particular churches. Under the guidance of the Holy Spirit, through the proclamation of the gospel and by means of the celebration of the Eucharist, they govern the particular churches entrusted to them. In order to promote the concord and unity of the church with paternal solicitude toward those who in any region adhere to liturgical forms antecedent to the reform willed by the Vatican Council II," and is referring to any form of the Mass, in particular the traditional Latin Mass. He says, "My venerable predecessors, St. John Paul II and Benedict XVI, granted and regulated the faculty to use the Roman Missal edited by John XXIII in 1962. In this way, they intended to facilitate the ecclesial communion of those Catholics who feel attached to some earlier liturgical forms and not to others. In line with the initiative of my venerable predecessor, Benedict XVI, to invite the bishops to assess the application of the Motu Proprio Summorum Pontificum," that was Benedict's Motu Proprio, 3 years after its publication, "the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith carried out a detailed consultation of the bishops in 2020. The results have been carefully considered in the light of experience that has matured during these years. At this time, having considered the wishes expressed by the episcopate and having heard the opinion of the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, I now desire, with this apostolic letter, to press on evermore in the constant search for ecclesial communion. Therefore, I have considered it appropriate to establish the following. Number one, the liturgical books promulgated by St. Paul VI and St. John Paul II in conformity with the decrees of Vatican Council II are the unique expression of the lex orandi of the Roman Rite, the law of prayer, or of praying. Two, it belongs to the diocesan bishop as moderator, promoter, and guardian of the whole liturgical life of the particular church entrusted to him to regulate the liturgical celebrations in his diocese." Now, this gets to the heart of your questions, Stephanie. What does this mean? Here is where he specifically says what this means. So it's according to the bishop, or it's up to the bishop, to regulate the liturgical celebrations of his diocese. Therefore, it is his exclusive competence to authorize the use of the 1962 Roman Missal in his diocese according to the guidelines of the Apostolic See. Now, what that means, among other things, is that even though Pope Benedict XVI, in his capacity as Pope, issuing his Motu Proprio, extended permission for priests anywhere in the world to celebrate this Mass without the need for permission from a bishop, Pope Francis, in essence, is abolishing that and is saying, from now on, only the bishop can give permission. And as you'll see, as this gets a little bit more detailed, you'll see how this would play out. So therefore, it is his exclusive competence to authorize the use of this Mass. The third point, the bishop of the diocese in which until now there exist one or more groups that celebrate according to the Missal antecedent to the reform of 1970, in other words, the traditional Latin Mass, is to determine that these groups do not deny the validity and the legitimacy of the liturgical reform, referring to the new Mass, dictated by Vatican Council II and the Magisterium of the Supreme Pontiffs. Is this, again, the bishop, is to designate one or more locations where the faithful adherents of these groups may gather for the Eucharistic celebration not, however, in the parochial churches and without the erection of new personal parishes. What that means is that traditional Latin Mass may no longer be celebrated at the parishes. So in a parish, this is now forbidden to celebrate that Mass. And no new parishes are allowed to be erected as places where the traditional Latin Mass can be celebrated. The third point, to establish at the designated locations the days on which Eucharistic celebrations are permitted using the Roman Missal promulgated by St. John the 23rd in 1962, that's the old Mass. In these celebrations, the readings are proclaimed in the vernacular language using translations of the sacred scripture approved for liturgical use by the respective episcopal conferences. What that means is that unlike the traditional Latin Mass's custom of the readings being proclaimed in Latin, the readings now at those traditional Latin Masses that are permitted to continue must be in the vernacular language. So they will no longer be permitted to be proclaimed in Latin, as was the custom. The next point, the bishop must appoint a priest who, as delegate of the bishop, is entrusted with these celebrations and with the pastoral care of these groups of the faithful. This priest should be suited for this responsibility, skilled in the use of the Missale Romanum, antecedent to the reform of 1970, that's the old Mass Missal, must possess a knowledge of the Latin language sufficient for a thorough comprehension of the rubrics and liturgical texts, and be animated by a lively pastoral charity and by a sense of ecclesial communion. This priest should have at heart not only the correct celebration of the liturgy, but also the pastoral and spiritual care of the faithful. The fifth point, to proceed, this is what the bishops are called to do, to proceed suitably to verify that the parishes canonically erected for the benefit of these faithful are effective for their spiritual growth, and to determine whether or not to retain them. In other words, if there are such parishes or such groupings, the bishop could, if he decided to do so under this motu proprio, he could abolish them, or at least the term suppress is a legal term, and it doesn't necessarily have the connotations that we might think, but that could be another form of handling that. The next point, priests ordained, now this is very important, priests ordained after the publication of the present motu proprio who wish to celebrate using the Missale Romanum of 1962, in other words, if they wish to celebrate the traditional Latin Mass, they should submit a formal request to the diocesan bishop who shall consult the apostolic see before granting this authorization. So let's say a young man is ordained to the priesthood tomorrow, or today for that matter. He is forbidden from celebrating the traditional Latin Mass unless he receives permission from his bishop, and his bishop may not give him permission unless he has first checked with the Apostolic See first. The next point, priests who already celebrate according to the Missale Romanum of 1962 should request from the diocesan bishop the authorization to continue to enjoy this faculty. That means what it says, of course, but this would also extend to, let's say, groups such as the Fraternity of St. Peter. They celebrate according to the old form, and now they have to receive permission from the bishop in order to continue to do this. The next point, institutes of consecrated life and societies of apostolic life erected by the Pontifical Commission Ecclesia Dei. Now, that would also extend to groups like the Priestly Fraternity of St. Peter. So such institutes of consecrated life and societies of apostolic life fall under the competence of the Congregation for Institutes of Consecrated Life and Societies for Apostolic Life, the Congregation for Divine Worship and Discipline of the Sacraments, and the Congregation for Institutes of Consecrated Life and Societies of Apostolic Life for matters of their particular competence, exercise the authority of the Holy See with respect to the observance of these provisions. So I interpret that to mean that in a given case, either or both of these two dicasteries could say to a religious order or to a group like the Priestly Fraternity of St. Peter, you can't do this anymore. That's how I understand that to mean. And then he concludes by saying, everything that I have declared in this apostolic letter in the form of motu proprio, I order to be observed in all its parts, anything else to the contrary notwithstanding, even if worthy of particular mention, and I establish that it be promulgated by way of publication in L'Osservatore Romano, entering immediately in force, and subsequently that it be published in the official commentary of the Holy See. And he gives the date. This is given July 16th, 2021. So that's it. That's the entirety of the document itself. And I don't know if you have any follow-on questions, Stephanie, but there now people have a chance to understand what the document actually says. Any follow-up questions
okay,
on that?
Well, thank you very much. Yes, because the Confraternity of St. Peter and the Institute, I had specific questions, and you did answer that. So I guess prayers will be uplifted, and that's all I can say is prayers will be uplifted. But, you know, I appreciate your response and your clarity in that, and it's certainly helpful to all of us.
I'm glad, Stephanie, yes. And obviously, we, like you say, we should be praying for the Pope and all of our bishops. We want them to be good bishops, and we ask the Lord to bless them with the things that they need to be good bishops. One thing to think about here, and this is, I think, just worth mentioning for people who might think the sky is falling. Pope Benedict XVI, after a long era of what amounted to, without it being actually the force of law, but in the eyes of many people, it certainly seemed as though the traditional Latin Mass had been suppressed, generally speaking. Pope Benedict XVI, he showed that it was not abrogated, and in his motu proprio, he said this is going to be widely available. Every priest can celebrate it if he wishes to do so. He's got to be sufficiently trained in order to do so, but he doesn't need permission from the bishop. And all the things that he said in his motu proprio, that became the law of the church. Now, Pope Francis, who is the, you know, the supreme legislator, as we recognize popes to be, he has now established the law of the church, which is, as we can see, somewhat radical change from what Pope Benedict XVI said. Here's my point. A future pope could reverse this, just as Pope Francis has reversed what Pope Benedict did. A future pope could say, no, we're not going to do that anymore, and the traditional Latin Mass is now free to be celebrated by any priest. He can, in other words, he could revert to Pope Benedict XVI's law, and he would have the right to do so. So this is another thing for people to remember. This is not something that, by virtue of this, is permanent forever and ever, amen, because we just saw one pope changing the law that an earlier pope did. And that means, of course, that a future pope could change it back if he so desired. Whether that'll happen, I don't know. But that's something else to consider as we see what's going on here. I hope that helps, Stephanie. Thank you. Let's go now to Maria Cristina in Fort Myers, Florida.
Good morning, Patrick. My question is, I wonder, did Jesus know since he was a child? Did he always know? Was he aware that he was God?
Yes. He always knew that he was God. Certainly in his divine nature, he knows everything that can be known as God. And then with his human nature, of course, his human mind had to learn things, like he had to learn how to walk, he had to learn how to speak and do the things that children learn how to do. So we don't minimize or deny that aspect of it, but that would not preclude Jesus from knowing who he was from the very beginning, from the moment of his conception. It's a difficult thing to try to imagine. But those who say that Jesus only gradually became aware of his mission and the Syrophoenician woman at the well taught him something that he didn't know, none of that is true. Jesus knew perfectly well from the very beginning who he was and what he was here to do.
By the way, that was a great apologetics conversation you had at the first hour. And it's also a good example. Maybe you can translate this for me. No hay peor ciego que el que no quiere ver.
There's no one so blind as he who will not see.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you have encountered a lot of those people in your apologetics life.
Yeah, God bless them. I mean, I don't see people as enemies by any stretch, maybe just people that we have yet to win over. So I agree with you. That was a good apologetics exercise this morning. And quite frankly, Maria, the reason that I do those things is so that all of you can learn how to do it as well, because you're going to meet people who will take that same approach. And if you can learn from this program how to handle those situations, so much the better, right?
Yes, I have tried to do that with my own son, and so far I haven't succeeded. So maybe a little prayer from you will help me.
You got it. Well, thanks. And pray for me too, please. Let's go now to James, listening in Traverse City, Michigan, a beautiful town, if ever there were one. Welcome, James.
Hello, Patrick. I've been talking with my friends about, like, religion and life for a really long time, and recently the topic has shifted to marriage and, like, what the purpose of marriage is.
Mm-hmm.
And many of my friends have made the suggestion, well, not just the suggestion, like, they believe this is what should happen, but they want to get rid of the institution of marriage altogether. And they cite things like the stigma of divorce. It like compels people to acquire mistresses. It just leads
to bad
things.
That's a novel theory.
So, mm-hmm. So they think that in order to actually like be happier, like as a society, that we mm-hmm. should abolish marriage. And I, as a Catholic, am not sure how to address that question or that proposal.
Okay. Are these people that you're talking to, are they Catholic, or what's their background?
So one of them is Catholic, but the rest of them, I would say they're not. They're like bordering between agnostic and atheist, but
okay.
You have to be careful around them, because if you say, you know, God or Catholicism or religion, you're immediately in their latitude of rejection. So
that's
you
okay.
have to use other appeals to, yeah.
Yeah. I would love to be around those people, and I would bring up God every chance I had just to provoke them into a conversation with me. That would be fun. This reminds me, I've seen this meme before with a guy, you see an arm and a hand holding a squirt gun, squirting the squirt gun at the sun, as if that's going to extinguish the sun. And this is kind of what that makes me feel like, you know, because they think that we should abolish marriage just because, what did you say, that because the stigma of divorce somehow makes people have to have mistresses? I think that's how you put it. People are responsible for their own actions. So you're responsible for your own actions. And if you're in a difficult situation, so be it. But it doesn't mean that that somehow forces you to do something that is not right. So it's a spurious argument in the first place. And maybe you could deal with it by just asking them to defend that and apply it to maybe a different scenario. So instead of marriage, what about a business partner? You know, maybe we should just abolish corporations altogether because of the stigma of, you know, maybe the CEO is embezzling from the company and he's forced into doing it because this, you know, this dumb rule about having a corporation. I mean, it's just silly on the face of it. And you might use a parallel example like that to show it. But it's not something that I would waste any time trying to defend. I'd say, hey, listen, if you guys don't want to acknowledge marriage as an institution, okay, whatever. But the rest of the world is going to continue seeing it for what it really is. You also asked about right. What is the goal of marriage? Is that how you put it? Or what is the purpose of marriage? I want to make sure that I cover that point too, if that's part of what you were asking.
Well, yeah, one of the points that they oftentimes bring up is that marriage is not a necessary institution for human beings to be happy and to procreate and, you know, have children.
Mm-hmm. Well, so they sure haven't experienced much of the world then. There is such a thing as jealousy. And maybe they never went to public school, or they never had a girlfriend, or they never fell in love. Human beings, being who we are, if you fall in love with somebody, you want exclusivity. I mean, normal people do. You may have some crackpot who's into something different, but you want exclusivity. And so if you fall in love with a woman and you want to marry her, you want her for yourself. And that's right. That's how it should be. And here's why, even just from a practical standpoint. Stand by. Cyrus, he made an executive decision right there, James. I don't know if you noticed that. But we're going to come right back to you, and I'll offer you a thought or two. And then more phone calls right after that. I'll be right back. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the relevant radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
Okay, back to James in Traverse City. James, you and I got rolling, and there was something else we wanted to get to, and we ran out of time. So can you briefly remind me, these are your wacky friends who are saying they want to abolish the institution of marriage, and people should not have to get married but still have children however they want. That was the gist of it, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay, so I had started by talking about the issue of jealousy, and it's a natural human emotion, especially when you're dealing with the woman you love or the man that you love. And so I was, you know, kind of tongue-in-cheek saying, well, maybe they had never been in public school or maybe they never had a girlfriend. My point there is that human nature being what it is, especially in that area, seeks exclusivity. And what I didn't get a chance to say was, imagine a world in which instead of a husband and a wife, you have a man and a woman, and maybe some children come along, and then maybe another man decides, you know what, I like her. She's not your wife, so I like her. I mean, this leads to things like murder. It's kind of a big deal, right? So it leads to things like murder. You also have, in a chaotic, undisciplined scenario like that, where it's just free love everywhere and people can mix and match and do whatever they want. Think about the danger to the children, not just the danger to the women, but the danger to the children. One of the horrendous aspects of some marriages after they break up and the wife is going out with boyfriends and things like that, it's not at all uncommon for the boyfriend to be either physically or even sexually abusive to the children. This happens a lot. It leads to so many evils, up to and including murder, that the institution of marriage is the only solution that makes any sense for any kind of society. And if you didn't have that, you would have mayhem. It would be unlivable. And I think the evidence of that, the proof of that, is that throughout all of human history, that's the way things typically go, is that civilizations, regardless of where in the world they are or when, they all seem to recognize that the best way to do this is to have marriages where you have a husband and a wife and there's some commitment to each other and there's some legal protection. In various ways it will be different, but the point is, human beings recognize this is the best way for us to do this. And in all the situations where you've got the free love and you've got the mix and match and you've got all of that, only mayhem and misery follows. It may be fun for a while, but after the fun is over, you're left picking up the pieces, and it's never pretty. So that's the part I wanted to get to, James, in addition to it. I'm glad you stayed on the line and waited for that. Thank you. Let's go to Maria now in South Orange, New Jersey. Hi, Maria.
Oh, hi, Patrick. I know that you're very short of time, but I just wanted to get your take on something related back to the COVID vaccine. Yesterday, I got an email from the Metropolitan Opera. I've had a subscription there for several years, and I actually had a credit because of the shows that the ones that I didn't see during the COVID, blah, blah, blah. And I get an email yesterday. I haven't subscribed yet to this coming season, although I was very much looking forward to it, and I'm going back to the opera. I'm so excited. Yesterday, I got an email from them saying to subscribe, blah, 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 because, and they guarantee our safety because everyone who comes there, all the performers, all the ushers, everyone has to show proof of vaccination.
Right. And so you have a choice. You can either get vaccinated, or you can say, ta-ta, I'm out of here. I'm not going to do it.
Well, that's what I did. I literally called them and I asked them to refund the money that I had on credit there that I was going to use towards the coming year. And I told the gentleman, who was very nice, I said to him, you know what? Should I bring my my card to tell you that I've had my MMR? And I almost was going to say something like, is anybody checking to make sure that all these people entering our borders have their COVID vaccine cards with them? I mean, really, every day, thousands of people pour into our border and nobody checks them.
Yeah, we talked about that
but
today a little bit.
I cannot go to an opera. Yeah, I know. That's why. That's when I decided to call. Now this is, and I think that this is going to be the future. We're going to have to be wearing like the Star of David. We're going to have to be wearing these stars, you know, that say have a U on them, and then we're not going to be allowed into places.
Well, that's already happening. Obviously, we don't want to diminish the horror of what happened to the Jews during World War II. So that's one reason why I am firmly opposed to people, not you, but somebody who would suggest something like that. That would be frivolous by way of comparing what happened to the Jews. But I get your point, though. And, you know, it's interesting. It's eerie, if you ask me, Maria. If you go back and listen to this program a year ago, 13, 14 months ago, 15 months ago, when COVID was really hitting hard. And Cyrus, you remember this. I was, you know, thinking out loud, like, well, you know, it could get to the point where, okay, you don't have to have a vaccine, but you also can't go to your child's school recital, or you can't go to a restaurant, or you can't go to the Metropolitan Opera in New Jersey.
That's exactly what you said. And that was just the baby steps. And then ultimately it'll be, you can't travel, you can't get on a plane. And then it'll be, you can't go get groceries.
Right. You can't. And remember how kind of wacky that sounded when I was talking about it hypothetically 14, 15 months ago?
I was like, that's ridiculous. This is the United States of America.
Yeah.
Never will people put up with
true.
That.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. So it's I don't say that true, to say sadly. I told you so, Maria, but it's
I
happening.
I told you so.
No, I know. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, you know, maybe I can be your substitute for the Metropolitan Opera. I can't sing like they can, but I will give you 3 hours of my time every morning, Monday through Friday. I can promise you that. And no vaccinations required to listen to this program.
I know. And I'm always listening. Thank you.
Thank you. Hang in there. It's going to be okay. Come what may. Let's go to Jeannie now in Richmond, California. Hi, Jeannie.
Patrick, I have one quick question.
Sure.
What can you do when you're up to receive Holy Communion and a terrible word comes to your mind, like a swear word? What can you do after you've received it, but you feel so badly?
Yeah, don't worry about it. Don't feel bad. That's just old hairy legs trying to distract you. He knows that this is... Go ahead.
I'm in the pro-life movement, and I'm almost 73, and I've heard this from other pro-lifers. This sometimes happens. They say terrible things to us, the abortion people, and invariably, sometimes we remember these terrible words that they shout at us, and I cried all the way back to my seat, and at the end of Mass, I knelt down on the altar and asked our Holy Father to forgive me, and I'm going to confession tomorrow.
That's good. Now, you don't need to go to confession for that. Put your mind at ease. Old hairy legs, he tries to distract you. I mean, believe me, if hearing a bad word like that is the worst that you've had, then you've got it easy, and I'm happy for you. Many people, and I'm in this category as well, sometimes the most vile thoughts will come into someone's mind right as they're about to receive Holy Communion, and that's clearly the work of the evil one, because he's trying to do anything he can to prevent you from focusing on the Lord. So just dismiss it. You didn't commit a sin. It's not something that you did. It's not something that you're guilty for. You don't have to go to confession for it. You didn't do anything wrong. It's just the devil trying to pester you. So just brush him off, say your prayers, love Jesus, and it's going to be okay. Just ignore those things, Jeannie, is what I'm trying to say. I hope that helps. Let's go to John Paul in Milwaukee. Hi, John Paul.
Good morning, Patrick. Thank you so much for the work that you do on behalf of Relevant Radio. My prayers
Thank
go
you.
With you.
Thank you.
This morning I had the opportunity to read both Summorum Pontificum as well as the new document of the Holy Father. My question for you is this, as somebody who is well-informed and sort of has his finger on the pulse of the nation, if you look at the internet and you see this, the seeds of discord and disunity in the Catholic blogosphere, and also if we look closely, we can see that these groups are co-opting and weaponizing the liturgy, rejecting the council, preferring their own bishops against others, choosing to pit priests against priests and so forth. Is that the kind of fact pattern that has necessitated this gesture of the Holy Father? And then also a second part of the question is whether, in your opinion, you think that these groups will continue to sow these seeds of division and therewith justify and confirm the rationale for the Holy Father in making the decision he did today, Or do you think that they will now work with him to build bridges of unity?
Fascinating question. I just wish I had more time to answer it. So I'll do the best I can in 60 seconds, John Paul. I'm not sure which groups or blogs you're referring to in particular. So without knowing, I can just say the likelihood of some of those blogs who are adamantly opposed not only to the new mass, but they're adamantly opposed to Pope Francis, I don't foresee that they are going to say, oh, okay, well, we're going to start, you know, trying to be on the team. I don't foresee that happening, at least with some of them. It remains to be seen what might happen with some of the other ones. I really don't know, other than to say, I don't think those blogs prompted this motu proprio. I don't think that they're responsible, whether, you know, what they're doing is right or wrong. I don't think they're responsible for it. Yeah, my frustration, in John Paul, is you asked me an excellent question, and I'm out of time. So perhaps if you wouldn't mind calling me back on Monday, we could pick up where we left off. I'd love to talk to you more about this issue. I'm just out of time. Thank you. Until we are together again, I'll be praying for you. Please pray for me. God bless you.